Welcome to PR After Hours, your twice weekly cocktail of business, PR, and marketing tips hosted by me, Alex Greenwood. Every week, we bring you virtual happy hours featuring business advice from entrepreneurs and leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. We're going to get started in just a moment, so stick with us.
Hello, my name is Swire Ho, hashtag the promo guy from Garuda Promo. You're listening to PR After Hours with Alex Greenwood.
You know, it's not an original thought to say to fellow colleagues, business people, business owners, aspirants, anybody who wants to be involved in the world of work, that it's been a rough couple of years. And who knows what the future will bring. But I know one thing, particularly if you're in a leadership position, it's very important to take care of oneself. It's hugely important that you not only take care of your organization and try to meet your numbers and all those things, but there's got to be some self-care for leaders. And that's why I'm very excited to speak today with Paul Glover. He is a no BS workforce performance coach. He's a recovering trial lawyer, an ex-felon, an unabashed Starbucks addict, Chicago Bears fanatic, and the author of Workquake, a speaker on business and leadership topics. And he's a member of the Forbes Coaching Council. I think probably Mr. Glover has a few things to say about taking care of oneself. Paul Glover, welcome to the Virtual Lounge.
Well, thank you so much, Alex, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and also to your audience, and you're right. I absolutely do have a lot to say about self-care. You said at the very beginning of the podcast, this has been a very strange and obviously stressful couple of years. By the way, it ain't over. So anybody who thinks there's a return to whatever you thought was normal, you might as well get over that. That is a misconception. We are moving forward into a new year that's going to look exactly like this year. No less stress, plenty of anxiety, lots of problems. And for leadership, this means that they have to take especially good care of themselves before they can take care of others. By the way, that's my deal. In the coaching program where I have leadership, I've got 45 leaders, and I stress to them, especially since the pandemic started and changed reality, that this is an essential leadership trait. If you can't take care of yourself, you cannot take care of others. And if you don't take care of yourself, others model themselves after your behavior and they fail to take care of themselves. It is a ripple out effect.
Well, you know, pardon the pun, but there's that saying people have, you know, you got to put on your mask first, you know, like on the airplane, right? And I've seen this so many times, Paul, even before, of course, before the past couple of years, I've seen this with bosses. I've been a leader in my workplace, but I've also worked under some people. And the ones who modeled the behavior of, it's going to be, you know, now you're a Starbucks addict, I know that, but it's going to be a 10 cup of coffee day and I'm going to work until midnight and then I'll be back here at 5 a.m. and I'm going to eat crappy food and I'm going to, you know, that kind of thing. You can only do that for so long.
Absolutely. That's crazy. First, that's a crazy approach to living your life, much less work. At some point, first, we need to get over the concept of work-life balance. It's work-life integration. Where we're at now, there is no work-life balance because the boundaries between work and life have now been so blurred by the pandemic. We need to look at how we do what we do on a daily basis, complete different perspective. And so again, you're absolutely appropriately spot on about example model. Because if you don't, if you want to be that workaholic, if you want to be 80 hour a week person, believe me, you are going to lose your people. Your talent is not going to tolerate that. And if they see that's your expectation and they see that because of what you do, they're going to leave. By the way, we're in the middle of the great resignation, right? Don't give them an excuse. Don't let them believe they work for someone who does not care about them when it comes to their mental and physical well-being. And you've got to model that behavior. You said it appropriately. Put your mask on first. That sends a message immediately. And by the way, leadership is under a constant spotlight. From the time you get up to the time you go to bed, every action that you take as a leader generates a reaction from those that follow you. Hopefully it's a positive one. And I always start with the three legs of the stool, the wellness stool. You better get enough sleep.
Yeah.
Because, and I love hearing the guy who will tell me when we first start the coaching engagement, well, I can get by on 4 hours sleep. My deal is you could never get by on 4 hours sleep. And by the way, that's stupid. And I can show it. Well, and you know, Alex, in all honesty, I'm no BS about this. I've got enough research now. I've accumulated enough research to be able to show someone the science. Now, if you don't believe in the science, you and I are not going to have a long-term coaching agreement, because that to me is the basis for a lot of leadership, is there's enough information to be able to say, this is what you should do. This is what you need to do. And if you don't want to do that, show me the evidence that it's successful, other than in your own head. No, let's sleep. How about that? Let's actually get enough sleep so it's not as if we're drunk during the workday. That's what it's equated to. Less sleep is as if you're drunk. Well, my God, are you insane? That's crazy to want to have that state of mind. The second thing is eating. I hate the fact that people believe the pandemic has given them the right to eat crap. Because we're getting comfort food. This is a disaster. Don't put on pandemic pounds. Believe me, you've got to take them off. Don't do that. Again, what you put into your body absolutely generates what comes out of your mouth and your brain. And so be cognizant of this. Do I say don't have dessert? No. I'm actually looking at my own rules, by the way. I'm a crazy guy about because I believe you got to have rules. I've got the first one in eat using the 50% rule. I guarantee you that if you get a piece of dessert in the United States of America, it'll feed three people.
It's true.
You don't need to eat all of it. Eat half. I'm not saying don't eat. Eat half. When they pile 2 pounds of spaghetti on your plate, eat half. And by the way to do this is ask the server, give me a side plate, put that portion on and have them take the rest away, because otherwise you're going to eat it.
Yeah, you know, it's true.
Absolutely. And let me get your third one out, exercise. Absolutely, exercise has got to be a part of the leadership trait. You've got to exercise to keep yourself sharp mentally and physically. And by the way, it cannot be, don't negotiate with yourself. And people negotiate with themselves. You know what they do? They negotiate themselves down. Nobody ever negotiates themselves up. You've got to have your routine. You should have a coach, personal trainer. You've got to have that. By the way, the fact they closed down the gym does not give you an excuse not to exercise. So it's all about discipline. And once again, I'm looking up at my wall. Discipline creates opportunity. If you're not disciplined in these three areas, opportunity does not present itself.
These are such, you know, some people probably be listening to this and going, well, that's obvious. Well, if it's obvious to you, great. But are you doing what Paul said? Are you actually sticking to it? Can I get a confession here? All right. So you don't know this, folks, but Paul can see me and I can see him, and he looks great, calm, cool, collected, nice looking guy. I just breezed in from the kickboxing gym, sweaty, and he's like, I don't care. I can't smell you. So it's great. But the point being, Paul, confession time. I literally gained a COVID-19, and I don't think it was for two reasons. One, my gym did close, and even though I hung up my kickboxing bag, I just didn't fully motivate. I did what you said. What did you say? You go down, you take your expectations down, right? Yes. I did that, and then and we cook a lot here. We don't eat a lot of junk, but apparently I ate enough junk, and I probably had a few too many cocktails, and look, here I am. I've got 19 pounds heavier than I should be. So I did all that. But I want to tell you, I love this three-legged stool. I love this idea. because I preach exercise. That's the I preach the gospel of exercise, because also you talked about not getting enough sleep and how you might be drunk through the day. You don't get enough exercise. I don't know about you, but I have certain body chemistry. If I don't exercise, I get a little down. And that working out releases those endorphins and the serotonin gets changed, all that stuff. Have you kind of talked about that with your clients?
Absolutely, because to me, you know, they've come up with a new word, and I hate it. But I like Adam Grant, I really do. Except he came up with a new word called languishing, right? We're all languishing based off of the impact of COVID. And I'm like, dude, really? First, that sounds like you're a Victorian. Go back to Victorian. What did they call that? There was a malaise. Melancholy. I'm feeling melancholy. Well, let me slap that out of you. Start doing something. How about that? And by the way, if there's a mental, emotional issue, I get it. You need to deal with that. But for most of us, it's laziness that gets baked into the concept of my life has changed. And again, they shut down the gym. Shut down my gym too. Pissed me off, but I was like, all right, does that mean I get to exercise? No, what you do is you do push anyway. I'm not going to get into any details, but let's not think that languishing is a right.
Right.
Languishing is wallowing in self-pity. I don't have any tolerance for that. If you are a leader, now what you do in your off time, if you want to wallow, when you step into leadership, you're not allowed to wallow. You know why? Everybody sees you wallowing. And guess what? They decide that it's okay for them to wallow too. So let's stop languishing. And the way we do that is we take action. We actually do something. Maybe we do it physically. Maybe we do it mentally. But we move. Movement is huge. If you do not move, you become stagnant. And without movement, there's no momentum. Without momentum, there is no solutions to problems. You've got to move towards it. Anyway, I find it interesting. People have a tendency to run away from it. My contention is you run towards it. You say, that's what I've got to do here. That's my job. Maybe it's my mission, my vision. Because as leaders, we should have that, right? We've got to have a strategy, but you also have to connect that to your vision, your mission, and you have to say, here's the plan. By the way, we call it an action plan. We don't call it a sit down and look at it and read it plan. It's an action plan. Anyway, so yes, let's just get it out of our heads that we're allowed not to take action. In fact, I suggest to you that it's more important than ever to take action for everybody.
I love this. I love what you're saying. I totally agree with you. Let me ask you something, though. For your executive coaching, is there a certain type of executive you cater to, or is it across all sectors, or what are we talking about here?
By the way, you can probably tell, I'm an acquired taste. I actually had one of my clients, I said, you know, I want you to give me a reference for my website. He said, sure. I said, well, all right, tell me what it is. He said, Paul's an acquired taste, like cyanide. I said, well, I don't think I'm going to use that one. He said, okay. But he said, you are an acquired taste. And what I found, unfortunately, and not that I'm whining about it because I've got a business, is that I only mesh well with about 20% of the people that I interact with as to whether or not they should be, that I should be their coach. And that is just because I have a very, obviously you can tell, I have a very, very strong perception and opinion about what coaching should accomplish. And to the extent that I, you know, I'm outcome driven, it requires an action plan. We sign a 12-month contract. And by the way, I believe that coaches need to put their skin in the game. And I put my skin in the game by doing this. Once we've agreed on what we're going to accomplish in the coaching program, at the end of that 12-month period, as my client, you get to decide if we accomplished it. And if we didn't, you don't pay me. Dead bang, nothing. Yeah. By the way, a couple of things are going to happen here. First, once I have skin in the game, I'm much more motivated to coach you.
Right.
Second, I will hold you accountable, because I can tell you now, not only do you have something to lose, I have something to lose if you don't perform. Because obviously coaches don't do the performance aspect of this. What they do is they help someone develop the action plan. Mine is very, by the way, this goes with being a recovering lawyer. I like to have everything known so that we're not going to have the unexpected, I didn't know that's what was going to happen. Yeah, so we have an action plan for 12 months. It can change, but we're going to have specific action steps every other week. And we're going to check in. And when you say you're going to do something, and 2 weeks later we have our call, and you tell me you did it, I'm going to hug you. I'm going to give you love because you deserve it. When you tell me you didn't do it, I'm going to take my 10 and a half boot and I'm going to put it on, and we know what's going to happen next, because I don't want to hear you didn't do it. By the way, were you in a coma? All right, good excuse. Oh, you didn't have time. Bad excuse. Never use that one again. Because otherwise, you're not holding up your end of the deal. And by the way, anybody can get out of the coaching program at any time they want. But when they do, they pay me the full year.
I like this. Yeah. This is good. Yeah, because it's a typical thing. When you give something away, people don't value it. I don't care what they tell you. That's why every time a marketer tells me, "Oh, give away your books for free. You'll build audience." Well, no. I work my ass off on those books. I'm not giving them away. Occasionally, okay. I'm not going to lie. But this whole thing of a strategy, you know, of a lost leader, doesn't work for me.
No, I agree with you. If you're right, by the way, you've written a book. How many books have you written?
As of next month, it'll be 11 or 10.
Oh my God, you're my hero. Book it about killed me. So when someone says to me, "Give me your book for free," I'm like, "You want a pint of blood to go with that?" Because I put that blood into that book, and if you don't want to pay the paltry $15, it's okay with me. But anyway, yeah. So I think that there has to be commitment on the person being coached and the coach.
Yeah.
And at that point, you develop a relationship of trust. Because if you don't trust each other in a coaching relationship, don't have it. And from that point on, we're going to earnestly commit and work towards the goals that you told me you wanted to reach.
Right.
By the way, if I believe they're unrealistic, I'm the first one to tell you, let's not do that. And as we go through the process of that 12 months, they change. Obviously, anybody, I tell people, I had to completely change my coaching approach in March of 2019, because I had with all of my clients scheduled a 12-month active performance improvement plan for each of them. And of course, when COVID-19 punched everybody in the face, trying to tell them we were going to have to do this crazy improvement plan, no, that wasn't going to work. So we changed. Why? Well, you've got to be adaptable. Correct? And we are. But within that coaching process, I obviously go to the self-care as the beginning stage. First, you need to tell me you got boundaries.
Yeah.
Even though we're doing work-life integration, there still have to be set boundaries. They're just not the old boundaries, right? I'm okay with you saying, listen, I'm working a 10-hour day. All right, I got that. I'm interested. Are you taking a nap in the afternoon? Nap. Yeah. How about a 20-minute relaxation? I don't care whether you sleep or not. Take a break. Are you getting up and moving around during the 10 hours? I want to know that. I don't want to know you're sitting at your desk for 10 hours. And by the way, I'm a great one on the Japanese call it forest washing.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Love it. Believe me. I can't meditate. I've tried. You would have to drug me before I can meditate. So, but walking through the woods is crazy good for me. And I believe it is for most people if they have that right attitude about just go there and let it happen. It's extraordinary. And obviously you shook your head. Yes. You either experienced that or you know about it.
It's one of the things that did help me get through the COVID lockdown was I go to the local park, which is like a nature preserve. It's not just like a park with swings. It's like a little mini forest. And yes. I can't tell you how reviving that was to me.
It is. It's fantastic. The Japanese, have, like I said, they have a term for it. They believe in it. I was a skeptic, but I was like, got to go try this because, you know, obviously, research guy looked at it. And believe me, for anybody who's listening, if you don't do anything else, try this. If you want a stress reliever, it's not alcohol or drug induced, forest, take a 20 or 30 minute walk. Doesn't have to be fast. Just if you want to amble, just be in amongst the trees. There's just something about it that washes the stress away. Yeah. So that's certainly one of the things that I obviously recommend. We do the three legs of the stool right away. We establish your boundaries. I'm okay with you working a 12-hour day as long as you took a four-hour break between 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock. And then if you want to go back and do two more hours and still get your sleep in, I'm all right with that. I'm not telling people that you have to have a fact, I believe it's silly to say I'm going to have a rigid 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I don't see that working anymore just because, again, it's integrated with work and life and you can't do it. Take 2 hours off when your kids come home from school, do dinner, do homework, maybe watch a little TV with them, play a game, do something that interacts so that they know you're alive and they're parent and you're human. And then if they go to bed or go do what they're gonna do, then if you wanna go back and do a couple more hours, I'm good with that. I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm saying that that is how you start to get what we used to call work-life balance.
Yeah.
Structure it within your day, right? And as a leader, you've got the ability to do that. You should not be on 24/7. It just makes no sense. Like I said, do not send emails to people after 9 o'clock at night. It's 8 o'clock. Pick a time that's reasonable and stop already.
Yeah.
First, I'm sorry. I've been doing this a long time and I have yet to have anyone convince me, unless there was a real emergency, that there was any reason. And when I say a real emergency, the building's on fire, call the fire department is a good way to start. Other than that, do not be aggravating people at 11 or 12 o'clock at night just to show, because to me, that's just showing them you're the boss.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with being the boss, by the way. If you have to tell people you're the boss, you ain't the boss.
Yeah, Paul, that is so true. I do something with that. And also, I'm a consultant, so I don't want my clients to think that I am sitting there at 11 o'clock at night working for them. I mean, I bill them for every hour, but I have a life and I have things I want to do. So what I do, I boomerang my email. If I want to download something and get them an email, I'll have it fire off at 8:30 the next day. I may do it at that time, but that's, now, sometimes people say to me, well, you want the client to think you're working all the time. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't really want the client to think that I'm at their beck and call. But it's a little different than if you're working for a company and you're a leader, though. I get that, what Paul's saying here. But I totally agree with you, Paul, that it's performative, fake leadership to do that kind of thing. And it annoys people. And I think, frankly, it stresses people out. So I totally agree with you, Paul. I hate it that we're almost out of time here, but I wanted to ask you one more question and then we'll make sure everybody knows how to find you. But what is probably the, and you may have already covered it, forgive me if you have, but what would you say, based on your clientele and your vast experience, what is the one most correctable, most actionable thing that you seems to be the focus of most of your clients when you first onboard them? What is the one thing that it's like the first low-hanging fruit, you're like, okay, everybody seems to be doing this?
Well, I can tell you that first, come into my coaching program the last 2 years, I've just been overwhelmed with obviously all of the stress and the distractions. And so when I talk to them, we start having a conversation that says, first, I want to know your blind spots. I need to know that because without knowing your blind spots, I can't help you, because I guarantee you a lot of the stress and the distress you're feeling comes from those blind spots, that you are not looking at things clearly. But I guarantee you other people know what they are, and they may be playing you based off of those blind spots. So we're going to do that 360 degree review, because I don't know what they are, but I guarantee you that do an appropriate 360, you're going to find out what those blind spots are, because it's going to be anonymous and it's going to be the right questions to ask about your behavior as a leader. And once we've started to establish what the blind spots are, you know what we do with that? We stop the self-inflicted injuries.
Nice.
And that's my deal, is that we got to start off and accept the fact you have blind spots. It's amazing to me how everybody goes, well, what are you talking about? I don't have a blind spot. Really? That's a blind spot, by the way. Well, thinking you don't have a blind spot is a blind spot. And I said, by the way, let's define blind spot. You can't see it. Do you understand that? Right? Because if you can see it, it's not a blind. But first they have to be convinced. And then second, we then do the objective information. See, once again, back to the recovering lawyer, I don't want to just tell you I think you have them. I want to now bring evidence in and say, this is now objective evidence. And you can say, well, I don't believe it. That's okay. You can say, I'm aware, but I don't care. There's that attitude, right? Well, that's interesting. I believe it, but I don't care. And we're probably going to have a difficult coaching session, by the way. But that's where I start. So once we've got the blind spots identified, we then say blind spots cause self-inflicted injury. Let's work on the blind spots. And that starts us in a very positive way because they can see immediately. They will see a difference. By looking at that blind spot, identifying it, recognizing it, and saying, I now know what I have to do to avoid that one, normally increases engagement. And engagement is all about suddenly recognizing that those people that count on you for leadership suddenly are responding differently to you.
Yeah.
More trust, psychological safety. It's amazing to me how many people think that they are great communicators. Usually that's our number one deal. We start off with the fact that you think that communication is based on telepathy. Well, unfortunately, nobody else does. They need to actually hear coherent sentences. But anyway, so that's the deal.
Paul Glover, this has been so instructive and inspirational too. And it's a good reminders too. If listeners think they might be one of that lucky 20% who might mesh well with you, how do they get in touch with you?
Oh, absolutely. They can very simply, paulglovercoaching.com is the website. You can obviously get contact information there. It's at paul@paulglovercoaching.com or my LinkedIn profile, Paul Glover Coaching.
I love it. Paul Glover, the no BS. Did you get that, folks? I got that. The no BS workforce performance coach. Thank you so much for joining us here in the virtual lounge.
Alex, a real pleasure to talk to you and to your audience. Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, you know what that means? Looks like it's last call here at your virtual lounge for PR news, views, and interviews.
We'll keep it short and sweet. Just remind you, if you like the show, there's many ways you can help us keep it going, not the least among which is to rate this podcast. Simply go to the show notes at prafterhours.com or wherever you're getting this podcast and click on the link. ratethispodcast.com/after, and it will take you to Apple Podcasts and a couple other places. Very easily. One click, you write your review, it's done. Can't tell you enough how important it is to get ratings on those sites so that we can build our audience and keep bringing you the kind of information you need every week for your business. Also, don't forget, if you want to sponsor the show, give us a tip in the virtual tip jar or ask a question. There are links in the show notes. Well, I think it's time that I cleaned up and closed up for this edition of PR After Hours here on Anchor FM.